Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up, everybody, and burn down, burn down the system. May us the exit move. Wake up the silence, maturity.
Welcome to another episode of the Star Chamber Show. It's Alex Brown and Sailor Danelle week, so you're in for some awesome stuff, some announcements, and a really cool guest we're both super excited about. For that, how are you doing, Alex? What's the haps?
Well, life is pretty good today. Yesterday was a Monday disguised as a Tuesday, so I'm glad that's over with.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that from you. Yep.
Yeah,
those are no
glasses
fun.
Broke, ran late to work, discovered a lot of data entry was out of place, and
it was a day you could write country music on. Yeah.
I know. But I don't have a pickup truck or a dog, so, yeah.
All right. Maybe not. Maybe you'll get a good story out of it then.
I have a Stratus and a cat, though.
Well, there you go. You're almost there.
Yes, indeed. Well, what are you reading?
What am I reading? Oh, gosh. I feel like this is the year where I'm determined to, like, binge on graphic novels. And I've been on the shoujo manga kick, which apparently my inner spirit animal is like a teen girl at the moment. But I've done, like, this thing because the library... My library doesn't always have, like, whole series in, so I'll get, like, the first volume and see how I feel about it. So I've really found some interesting series, and I reread some things that I really liked, and I found some new stuff that is really good. There's one that's volumes, and it's Saturn Apartments, and it's about, the Earth in the future. They decided to make the entire Earth a nature preserve to try to heal it because the environment got screwed up. So all humanity lives in a giant ring around the Earth, and it's told from the perspective of these window washers because they have to go and wash the windows of the different levels, and it's kind of like a very family-friendly Snowpiercer because, like, what level you're on is, like, your class, and it's the overall arc is about trying to get back to Earth and all this stuff. It's really interesting. Like, I was tearing up by the last volume, and it was really, really fun, and I'm rereading Fruits Basket, which is a much older title. It's about 20 or 23 volumes, but it's very, like, the art isn't as fabulous as some series I've read, but the story is phenomenal. It's basically this girl, through varying circumstances, ends up being taken in by this family who's, they're all possessed by a vengeful spirit from the Chinese zodiac, so they're all, like, under certain circumstances, they'll transform into their animal, and they each have, like, different emotional problems, trying to overcome different obstacles, and it's really, like, the story is just so good, and every time I read it, like, this is about the fifth time I'm reading it, like, you pick up on different stuff, so for that alone, it's just, and it's a fabulous kind of all-ages-friendly introduction to kind of manga and Japanese culture, and it's just so good. Makes me happy.
Sweet.
So, what are you reading?
I I really need to get into graphic novels more because that really sounds
good. Yes, you do.
Well, pretty much I am in the middle of multiple books. Of course, Carrie and I, we have our little thing where I pick a book and we read it together, then he picks a book and we read it together. So
That's cool.
Right now he and I are reading Game of Thrones, and I have finally gotten to the point where I am remembering the characters by each name, and I can actually have discussions about them and be like, oh, you know that chick that's married to that dude, and so I actually know their names now. I have started the audiobook in A Madman Mumbled by H. David Baylock. It's a collection of his short stories.
Okay.
And that's something I'm listening to on audiobook, and also at the same time I'm alternating out and listening to the audiobook of Don't Look Now by Daphne du Maurier. I try to really keep as much independent in my life as I do mainstream. And so also independent as well, I have Under the Devil's Wing that I'm reading. Under the Devil's Wing is by T.S. Bartnett, and it is an awesome werewolf novel. Other than that, from the last time we spoke, I finished the book called Poisonous by, that was by Tommy, oh Lord, I forgot his last name, Tommy Smith. And it's such a simple
last
name,
I was
going to
say, is it Tommy I know, or which Tommy is it?
It's by Tommy Smith, and it is a splatterpunk novel that takes place over the matter of a decade or two. And it is about a poisonous person. Like, literally, there is a poisonous thing inside of them that drives them to kill. And pretty much the ending of it is very devastating, and it's very easy to read, very fast-paced, very pulpish, extremely pulpish.
It's been a long time since I've read, like, splatterpunk, so I may have to check that out.
Yeah, there was a few splatterpunk-worthy scenes in it. I would say maybe three splatterpunk scenes.
Okay.
But that's really all I've been reading, so that's a little bit.
That's awesome.
So,
well,
do we have any announcements?
Yeah, I was just taking a look. First off, October 7th through 9th, the Imaginarium, if you're in the Louisville area or can get to the Louisville area, it is basically a convention about creative writing, from genre to marketing, business aspect, how to get started. There's a lot of great indie authors there showing up their stuff. Guest of honor this year is Brian Keene. There's workshops. There's all sorts of stuff. There's fun stuff, too. So for whatever reason, if you have an interest in that world, that's definitely like a one-stop shop to check it out. So enterTheImaginarium.com is the website. It'll tell you everything you need to know. Other than that, it looks like Brick Marlin has a book out, Ozarium, that's from Seventh Star Press. That is out now, and it looks really good. I know it's been getting a lot of good press. Dan Jolly is still doing blog appearances and things like that about Grey Widow's Walk. I think I've got him on my blog tomorrow, and he's fabulous. Like, he does such a good interview. I know we're still looking for help for the Thunderclap campaign for JL Mulvihill. I'll try to post a link of that on the Star Chamber page as well. So anyone who has a Twitter or Facebook and wants to get in on that, you're more than welcome to support that for her blog, for Steel Roots. It's the next one for her series that will be available on July 26th. And I think that's it that I'm seeing, unless there's something I'm missing.
All right. Well, the only thing I have coming up in my life event-wise is, besides Imaginarium, at the end of September, beginning of October, I will be attending Contraflow in New Orleans for the first time. And they have rented me a space. I'm excited. Never done a New Orleans show before. But
I will be interested in hearing how that goes for you.
Okay. Yeah.
I definitely want the dirt.
Update.
Yeah.
and they've granted me a space to show my short film, The Acquired Taste. So that'll be fun.
Ooh, that's right. Awesome.
Well, without further ado, I think we need to introduce our awesome guest of the night. And
yep,
tonight,
I'll leave it to you.
And tonight we have with us the author who is fabulous at working panels and meeting the public and just throwing herself out there with her books that just, I can't wait to dive into them, because when she and I were sitting next to each other at BayouCon, I kept looking over and I'm like, I've got to read these books. And so I grabbed her first one. I wish I could have grabbed all of them at once, but that day's going to come when I do grab them all. But tonight we have with us the wonderful Lynn Emery. Welcome to our show, Lynn.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, pretty much I just want to get everything started with tell us a little about yourself. I know that Sayla and I asked each other what we were reading at the moment, so feel free to tell us what you're reading and also tell us about what you like and just kind of your bio, really, as an author.
Okay, well, I'll start off with what I'm reading. Right now I'm reading a book by an indie author that's new to me. It's called American Specter. And she's an investigator for the police. No, I think it's the federal government. And there's a town called Spectre where ghosts congregate. And they're monitored to make sure that there are no problems, so that humans have accepted that spirits live and they feel more comfortable. So most of them have congregated in a town that just happens to be named Spectre. And the name of the book, again, is American Spectre. And so she's investigating a series of brutal murders. And it's just so interesting because, you know, in the book she has, there are these people who defend the Spectres and say, you know, they don't kill. And they have no motive to kill. They're dead. They don't need money. You know, they're not having an affair with somebody's wife or something. So there are none of the usual motives for a ghost to kill, but she's convinced that somehow it's tied to this new phenomena of ghosts walking among humans. So that's what I'm reading right now.
Sounds
and
so cool.
Amazon,
I
go to add that to my wish list.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called American Spectre, and the author is, wait, let me look it up right now. The author is Rashida Prilo.
Okay.
And I'll message you that spell, because it's a very unusual spelling. And so that's what I'm reading right now. And I finished reading, it's interesting that you were saying you were reading YA. I don't usually read young or, you know, fiction, but I read, I started the Dorothy Must Die series. That's a twist on the, have you heard of that?
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the Wizard of Oz, but trust me, Dorothy, the Tin Man, the Lion, they've all gone off the rails. They're just killing people. You know, they virtually enslaved the people of Oz. You know, really, yeah. And so
that's
it's
awesome,
like right? I mean, it's like it's YA, but it is so bloody. And they, Scarecrow tortures and experiments on people, and it's a best-selling. You know, it's a best-selling series, and I got it free on my Nook app and got hooked on it. And and her mission, the heroine's mission, is from the witches. Is, you know, we got to get rid of Dorothy because she's crazy. So
<That's>
wow.
Awesome.
So I had read a little bit about those books, but not into a great detail. But knowing that. Yeah, I'm going to read them.
It is not. It's not like the YA book. I mean, people are getting killed left and right, tortured. I mean, it was like, Dorothy, what happened, girl? You know what happened? So that's a fun series that I finished reading also. So about me, in my day job life, I am a licensed clinical social worker. I've worked in juvenile corrections. I worked in most recently in the mental health field. I've worked in an inpatient psychiatric unit as a social worker. I've done child welfare, child abuse and neglect investigations. I've been an expert witness in Louisiana and Texas in child welfare issues and issues affecting people with disabilities. And so my last job was I've worked for the state of Louisiana, and I managed a program. I managed funding that we funneled to private programs that served people with substance use disorders. So that's a little bit about me. I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I started writing when I was a little girl. I was inspired by Agatha Christie, did not know who she was, did not realize she was dead, did not realize she was English. But I read The Murder of Roger Ackroyd and decided I wanted to write murder mysteries, and I was 10. And so my mother didn't know that I was reading murder mysteries, so I was reading about people killing people, you know, and then wanted to write about people killing people. So she didn't even know it. She didn't know all of that to be disturbed by it, so that was good. Fast forward, I sold my first book in 1992. It came out in 1995 from Kensington Publishing, and I went on to publish about 12 novels, and they were all romantic suspense, because the first book that I sold was to a romance publisher, and I didn't really intend to write romance. I wanted to write murder mysteries, but because that was an open field and there was a publisher that was looking for African-American characters in romance, I wrote the book, and of course somebody died in it. It was romantic suspense, and so that's how I got published. That was my first book, and I went on to publish like 12 novels for traditional publishing, and now I'm an independent publisher, and I publish my books, and I have gone back to straight mystery with paranormal elements. You know, I have another series that's sort of a cozy mystery series, but what I'm writing right now are paranormal mysteries, featuring LaShawn Roussel, who's a psychic. And then I just started a psychic detective series, Two Sisters, and it's set in New Orleans.
That's awesome. My God.
I just finished in the LaShawn Roussel series. And that series is set in Vermilion Parish. Of course, Louisiana is the only state that has parishes instead of counties. So just think county when I'm talking about parish. Vermilion Parish, and it has a lot about Creole and Cajun culture in Louisiana. So that series is, the fourth book, Into the Mist, will be released in October.
Wow, man. Well, obviously you've done a lot of work, and you know, you've published over 20 books, which is, man, that's an achievement. So out of all of them, what title would be a great first book for someone who has never read you? What would be the best way for them to get started in reading your book?
Well, if all of my books really without exception are romantic suspense. There is either a murder or, you know, a crime involved. Mm-hmm. If the person doesn't like, is not that into the paranormal, any of my novels that, like, Tell Me Something Good or Kiss Lonely Goodbye or the book that was based on, a movie was based on, After All, you know, those books are fine. It depends on what you want. If you want the paranormal elements, then start with Night Magic. That's sort of a prequel to the LaShawn Russell books that I'm writing now. And again, it's called Night Magic. That was the very first book I sold. And the heroine in my paranormal mystery series first appeared in that book.
That is really cool.
Adding that one to my Amazon wish list, too.
Yeah. I feel like I just need to add everything to my Amazon wish list.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, you know, it was really interesting because in that book, she was the villain, and she terrorized the poor heroine in that book with, voodoo and spells, and because they hated, you know, they didn't hate each other. She hated her. And so that character at the end of that book was left in a interesting place. And, of course, there was a murder, and she was one of the murder suspects. And but I can't say that because y'all want to read the book. But anyway, I made the heroine of A Darker Shade of Midnight, which is the first book in the LaShawn Russell, which is her name, LaShawn Russell. This, the first book in her series is A Darker Shade of Midnight. And it sort of picks up with at where the end of Night Magic, some years later, it picks up with what happened to her after the end of that book. And it was really a nice challenge for me to take her from being the villain to showing how those events changed her and then her life going forward from that.
Well, let's see. That one is getting added, and I already have the rest of your books in that series added in my wish list as a reminder, but I'm probably going to just hit you up and be like, okay, I got my paycheck. I'd like to order the rest from you. Sign, please. Now, you had mentioned about BET had picked up your novel and made a movie from it. How did you feel when this happened, and were you pleased with the outcome? Also, what was your experience in having your book being made into a movie, like kind of the steps of it? Did you have much of a say-so in it?
I didn't even know. So this is the strange journey, and I'll try to keep it short. My publisher, Kensington, entered in negotiations that we didn't know, the authors didn't know about, entered in negotiations with BET, Black Entertainment Network, television, Black Entertainment Television, to take some of our novels and make them into movies. Those talks sort of transformed into BET deciding they wanted to buy all the contracts and become a publisher. And when they did that, they already had in mind to do at least two or three movies, made-for-TV movies, back then. And so I heard that they had those plans, but I only knew of three authors that they had targeted. So it was a complete surprise. I did not know one of my books was even being considered. So it was literally a call out of the blue. They woke me up a Sunday at 5 o'clock, and I was having my usual Sunday nap. And I was, you know how you are when you're just deeply asleep and the phone rings and it wakes you up and you are not really in your right mind?
Oh, yeah.
That's how, and so, you know, the lady, I think her name is Deborah Lee. She was like the vice president of the Colt Beat Black Entertainment Television, you know, because Bob Johnson owned it. And they later sold to Viacom. But so I'm out of my mind fuzzy. I wake up, I grab the phone because I'm thinking it's my mother or my brother. This is Deborah Lee. I'm the president of Black Entertainment Television. How are you? And I mumble, I'm fine, which is automatic, right? You're in the South. First thing you think,
yeah.
Oh, I'm doing, right? And then she's going on telling me that, you know, I have exciting news for you. We've selected your novel, After All, and I'm not even processing it because I'm still like half deep from the, and you know, my face is all marked up by the bread spread, my hair sticking all up everywhere. I'm trying to, and I know she was like, she paused, like, what in the world is wrong with this woman, you know, because you know how you're just mumbling because you just woke up. And then I said, oh, well, thank you. That's really nice. And she's like, that's really nice? That's your reaction? And so once I sort of, and, you know, and I thanked her and everything, and I hung up, and I got up, and I splashed water on my face, and then it hit me what she just said. So that's how it happened. It was completely unexpected. They made all the decisions. They pay you for the rights. No, I didn't write the script. They hired a script writer. They hired the director. They chose the actors and actresses. And so I had nothing to do with it, with the, you know, the they based it on my book, but I didn't have anything to do with the production or the writing of the script, and which is fine because I've never written a script. It's a whole different skill set. So I wouldn't have, you know, tried to raise my hand and scream, hey, I need to write this, because I've never written one before. And so I didn't have much of an experience with it because I really didn't have anything to do with it. They did, you know, fly me to Chicago for a first screening of the movie. I didn't get to, Holly Robinson Pete plays the lead character, television investigative reporter, Michelle Toussaint. I didn't get to meet her. The villain, the bad guy, well, one of them, was, and y'all are probably young, you probably don't remember this show, because I'm older than y'all, Hill Street Blues. And
I'm familiar with the name. I know my mom absolutely loved it, so I know the name. I know that much, at least.
Yeah, it's on my radar, but I've never gotten into it.
Yeah, it was off of television years before this happened anyway. But so, you know, as a teenager, I used to love to watch it. But so he was in it. There were actors that I actually recognized, like Holly Robinson Pete, before they dumped
right.
her from the – she was on The Talk, but then she had the reality show, you know, with her family recently. And so as for the movie, I had no expectations. I knew that movies they cannot do a movie adaptation for most books that matches the book. Also,
right.
They didn't want to film in Louisiana, so they changed the setting to Los Angeles. So the story is set in Los Angeles. They kept the basic story of her being an investigative reporter who uncovers a scandal. There's a murder. You know, they kept some of the basics, but there was no way, because the book, after all, has all kinds of subplots and double dealing and backstabbing and, you know, family issues and secrets. There was just no way they could put that in a, you know, 90-minute, I think it's 90
right.
minutes. Movie. There's just no way. So I hear authors get upset about that, but for most books, unless they're making a mini series, you know, there's just no way they can put everything that you can do in a full length novel, in a book, in a movie. So, but I was one of the maybe two authors that was just fine with the way they did my book. Other people hated the movies that were based on their books. But, you know, I think Holly Robinson Peete did a wonderful job. I was, you know, I would have written some of the script and dialogue differently, but I think the script was done very well, considering they hired a young lady who writes in Hollywood, and she did the script. So I had a very good experience from that standpoint. You know, they should have paid me more money for the movie rights. But that's part of the business part of it that, you know, BET, you know, I don't think, because they were considered the publisher as well as the producer of the movie, they used that to not a scale, you know, and that's something that I couldn't have anticipated, because I didn't even know that, you know, we were told after the fact that they bought all our contracts. And that's what traditional publishing does. I mean, when one company buys out another, your contracts are assets of the company. And so they can do whatever they decide to do, you know, and they sold that as an asset.
Yeah, I think that you make a lot of good distinctions and points all the way around that I think people don't, you know, easily think about in terms of that sort of process. Or like you said, how contracts work for certain types of publishers. So that's really cool to hear you say that, so people can be aware of that sort of thing too. But I'm glad, I mean, I totally get that, you know, adaptations have to, you know, it's not going to be the exact thing. So I'm glad that you were at least okay with it. And, you know, you make a lot of great points. So I know earlier you were talking about your paranormal series. So why paranormal? And what kind of Southern elements do you bring into it? Do you use, like, folklore, superstitions, or settings? And how many books in that series are there going to be?
So, yeah, I use all that stuff. So far there are four. And I was thinking this fourth one would be the last one, but she has a baby. And the baby, the toddler, is an intricate part of the book. And I know somebody is going to write me and say, now what happens with Ellie? Because the way the book is that these children, you know, it's like I'm putting my foot down, Muse. I'm not writing a YA about these children and what happens. So if I write a fifth book, I have to think about that. So far there are four books in the series. So the first book, as I talked about, the heroine, LaShawn Russell, was very bad in Night Magic. And, I mean, she wasn't misguided bad. She wasn't hanging with the wrong crowd bad. She was like the CEO and founder of the wrong crowd. You know, she was bad. You know, that was my challenge, to kind of try to rehabilitate her as a character, because she liked being bad, you know. And so when it picks up in the first book, A Darker Shade of Midnight, she comes back to Louisiana from L.A. because her grandmother is dying. And her grandmother was a psychic. It actually, you know, as you read through the series, you'll read more about her family history, and so she is psychic. She has some paranormal abilities, and some of the things that she set in motion in her old life come back to her, and it starts the evil, and she starts to see that maybe the crimes that are occurring in her hometown are because of some things she, you know, stirred up. in her days when she loved to use her power and voodoo. And so she is, and that's part of the through line of all four books, is that, you know, I have to do something about this, because basically I started it, and it's not, these are not just regular crimes. There's something else going on, and then I have to accept that I actually started this mess. And so the first book starts off with a murder, and she's once again the murder suspect. It also involves her grandmother and, you know, some of the family history. And it has a love story, because she meets and falls in love in that book. In the second book, Between Dusk and Dawn, I use the legends of what in Louisiana we call loup-garou. Have you heard that phrase?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the Cajun name of, well, people say werewolf, because really loup-garou, which loup is, you know, French for wolf. The loup-garou in Louisiana legend, because we're a very Catholic state. Remember, we were possessed by Spain. We were Spanish and French possessions in back and forth. And, you know, they are very, at that point, we were a very Catholic. Catholicism was the predominant religion in Louisiana. So in the loup-garou, or the shapeshifter, the legend is that people who did not properly observe Lent, and I don't know if any of y'all are Catholic, what Lent, you know what Lent is. That's where we deprive ourselves, you know, right after we've, you know, gone into overdrive drinking and partying on Mardi Gras. So if you don't, you know, hold to Lent like you're supposed to, sacrifice something, and if you don't do that, what happens is you get transformed into an animal at night, and you roam the bayous and the swamps. And the only way you can lift that curse is if you bite or scratch someone else and give them the curse. And, of course, that was a story that Cajuns and Creoles told their kids to make sure that they followed Lent. You know, if you say you're not going to eat candy, you know what's going to happen if you if you slip a Tootsie Roll, you're going to be you're going to turn into the loup-garou. And so that's the legend. And so in Between Dusk and Dawn, LaShawn gets these rumors that, you know, people are wandering in the bayous and the swamps at night, but it's more than just people stepping out on their husbands and wives. You know, there's the whispers are that there's a pack of werewolves are roaming around Vermilion Parish. So that's Between Dusk and Dawn. And there's more to it. There's a serial killer called the Blood River Ripper. That's part of the plot. And he's locked up, but he's related. He's linked to a series of murders, but he couldn't have obviously done the murders because he's locked up. So what is the connection? And so all that unfolds as to in Between Dusk and Dawn. And that's probably the bloodiest book when people read it. That really is the one. And people like that, too. It's like, you know, they really like that. But I scared myself a couple of times because I don't usually write real bloody. But there's a scene in there where I did scare myself, and that's where the pack is, you know, would pick up prostitutes and take them to what they think is a party, and, you know, things would go south. So I had a couple of graphic scenes in that. In Between Dusk and Dawn, Only by Moonlight is about demon possession and ghosts, and it's linked to a 200-year-old really grisly murder, and it's not, I meant to include it in the book, but I didn't. But I created this newspaper article that, you know, gave the background on this murder, and in the course of the book, the heroine realizes that there is connection to that murder and to a group of kids that are, you know, involved in what they think is a fun way to be in a cult. And so that's about demon possession, murder, and ghosts. And so that's Only by Moonlight, which is the third one. And then we come to Into the Mist, which this, again, will be out October of this year. And in that book, the heroine now has her own child. When the book opens, she is pulled into an investigation that involves a child who has presumably been kidnapped, and a strange message was written on the wall of her home, which the police can't interpret, and it's this this really arcane language, and it's linked to a cult, and she has to call on her psychic network friends to help her unravel this. And then there's a murder, and a second message in the same language is left at that murder scene, and she begins to help police, the sheriff's department, figure out that these are indeed linked. And there's a wider conspiracy that is not just national, but it's international. It's an organization that believes that Satan should rule the world, and it's called Legion. And so that's part of her battle, is to get back the children. The explanation of why it's not just this child, but they discover other children and why those particular children have been taken. And all that unfolds in the book. So that has to do with battling demons and battling evil, and a lot of biblical references to, you know, the apocalypse and Satan's attempt to speed up the apocalypse and to be victorious. And the people who believe that Satan should have won all along and should win. And so that's what Into the Mist is about.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Take my money. Oh, my gosh.
I am so happy that I got the first book to that series signed, because I can tell this is going to be something that I'm going to cherish for a very long time. The way that you've described each book, that is what I'm into. That is right there. Now, let me ask you this, because this is very, I think this would be very interesting, especially for people who are coming up in the field of writing and they haven't really published anything yet. When you're writing a subject such as demons and ghosts and so on and so forth, even though it is the subject of good versus evil, sometimes a lot of people can misconstrue that. What has the response been of your friends and family when it comes down to you writing of the subjects of this?
Well, you know, no, I haven't had any kind of blowback for it from it. Addressed to me directly, but apparently someone must have mentioned something to my pastor, because I was in church.
My dad's a minister, My dad's a minister, so the moment you say this, I'm thinking about 10 different ways this could go.
and by the way, side note, I teach Sunday school, and so I'm sitting in church, and I got drafted into teaching Sunday school. Trust me, I did not volunteer. But all the stuff in the Bible has been really, really good, especially for Into the Mist, y'all. I mean, really, I uncovered some really good stuff. So anyway, And I'll share some of that with you because I put it in my newsletter. But so I'm sitting in church, and the minister is, you know, he is about to give his sermon. He says, well, how many of y'all believe in ghosts and spirits? And I'm the only one that raises my hand. And so I'm looking around, and I'm like, you know, the Lone Ranger here. And so he says, you must believe in spirits and ghosts. It's in the Bible. The Holy Spirit, demons, all of that is in the Bible. So everybody should have raised their hand. And then he goes on to talk about evil and stuff like that. And so it's slowly dawning on me that somebody must have mentioned one of my books, like, you know, we got this among us. And I'm pretty active in church, you know, and I'm writing all this stuff about, you know, voodoo and, you know, spirits and stuff like that. And so that was the only indication that maybe there was some talk that never got around to me, because he addressed it that way in church. And I've had a couple of incidents, but, you know, people are, you know, especially in the Bible Belt here, where, you know, they're very leery of anything that has to do with voodoo. And so I've had a couple of instances at book signings where people, like, drop the book, like, voodoo. Like, they think just touching it is going to, you know, like, bring this evil on into their lives and everything. But that has not really been the rule. It's been the exception. And it also, you have to understand that when I started writing, I was what they call me, a romance writer, romantic suspense, which is very different from what I'm writing now. And so I had to sort of overcome readers expecting to read a romance when they pick up my book. So that had to be a transition from people really being upset that what happened? There's no, you know, the love story, that, you know, this, that, and the other. And I have to keep repeating, this is not a romance. This is not a romance. Not a romance. You know, the first time I introduced a character called the Blood River Ripper should have been like a tip-off. You know, this is not a romance, you know. And by the way, there is a river in Louisiana called Blood River.
Road trip.
Awesome. Yeah. Although I would read the hell out of a romantic series that just assigned a romance to someone called the Blood River Ripper, just on principle.
It's like, no, yeah, like that. These are not. That's been a transition for me, because I was a romance author and, you know, networking with romance readers and other romance writers. And so that's been a problem, because that's been the expectation with people who had read my books before and being very, very upset with me, you know, even though, like, because they just see my name and get the book, not reading the description.
Yes, that's actually happened to me once or twice, like with the Southern Home series. The first book, it'll get picked up pretty easily, and then the second book, it blatantly has a devil on the front of it, and there are stories in it about the battle between good and evil. That's the theme of it, really, and, you know, even though the devil is blatantly on the front of it, I've had people that have just dropped the book in horror. Oh, my God, all the stories are about that. Yeah, they are. But, you know, it's kind of funny to see their reactions. It really is. It makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah.
Now, we are starting to work on the last 10 minutes of the show. So before we ask any more questions, I want to go in and give you this opportunity. Is there anything that you wanted to address that we did not ask you?
No, if readers want to get in touch, they can visit my website, lynnemery.com, and all the links to where to find my books are on my website. And also, I didn't send you a link, but if people who subscribe to my newsletter, which is monthly and it's electronic, will get a free book when they sign up. And I have I have an advanced readers list also. That they will get first crack at Into the Mist. And so if there are any questions about my list of books and what I've written, they can go to my website. I have video, you know, I have trailers, video trailers, and my bio and everything else is with links on that website.
Okay, awesome. And just one more time, what's that website again?
It's lynnemery.com.
lynnemery.com. All right, everyone, go to that website, sign up for the newsletter, and get your free ebook there. That sounds pretty awesome. You can't beat that deal. And now, since we have a little bit more time left, I want to ask, what's the book you have written that you feel most connected to, and why is this?
The book that I feel most connected to? Really, and it's one of the romantic suspense novels, and all of my novels have lots of subplots, and the one that I was at one point most connected to personally is called A Time to Love, and it's actually set in the parish where my father's family originated, and that's West Feliciana Parish. Very historical. Very has all the. You went to the Myrtles Plantation.
Oh yes.
Right. Okay, Alex. So that's West Feliciana Parish. My father grew up in St. Francisville, and as a little girl, we used to go there, and you know, we'd hear all the stories. So that book is set in West Feliciana Parish, and one of the plots in that book is inspired by some family history / legend, because I don't know if it's true or not. And I was, you know, of course, close to my father and very close to his family. And it's my family, the Emery family, were slaves on the Rosedown Plantation. And there's lots of, you know, history and stories that I heard growing up. And so in A Time to Love, a family secret that's sort of connected to some of my family history, I use that in a subplot. So if I had to say, and I have a mystery series, a cozy mystery series that I intend to develop at some point. So I would have to say that book I'm most connected to, and it's set in a little town that actually, well, it's not really a town. It's called Solitude, Louisiana. That is a real place, and I had relatives that lived there. And I just love the name. It's just made for a book. And so that book is set in Solitude, Louisiana.
That's fantastic. I'm just like soaking up everything. Like, oh my gosh, everything sounds so cool. Before we go, we always like to ask people, what advice do you have for new authors? What's something that they really should keep in mind, or that would be good for them to know going into if they want to write?
I would say the best advice that I have is to network with other authors that are at different stages in their career. And so, like, you don't want to hang around with if you don't know very much and you just have one book, you don't want all your friends to be at that stage, you know, all your network partners, all the people. You want to be with people who have, you know, the same experience. You have 1, 2, 3 books, but you also want to get to meet and get to be friendly with and network with people who have 5 books, 10 books, 20 books. You want to network with people who are indie authors, but also make friends with some people who are traditionally published. And now there are so many hybrid authors where they do both. They have their own indie titles, and they write for a publisher, you know. And so that is the one best example, because every stage of my success was from networking with an author who gave me information that I followed up on that led to me selling my first book, learning how to be an indie author and publish my own books you know, starting in 2011. And so that's the best advice, is network with other authors and network with a variety of people at different stages in their writing career.
That is some really good advice, and actually we have not had that advice given on the show before.
No, and
that's
fantastic
a little
advice.
But that's the first time we've ever had anyone that's literally just spelled it out like that, and thank you so much for doing that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. That literally, well, that has just led to so many opportunities and finding out so many so much invaluable information for me as an author.
Well, as we draw near the end of our show, I just want to thank you so very much for taking time out of your hectic schedule to speak with us tonight. And, of course, for people who are listening to the show, you can find this episode plus more if you go to Blog Talk Radio, Star Chamber Show. Also, the link to this show should show up on Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, it will be there for all of time. So you are immortalized on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had a really good time discussing books and my books and writing in general.
Good. And as a matter of fact, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but Selah and I, we were nudging each other back and forth that we would really love to have you on here again, and hopefully you would enjoy doing a show with us around Halloween, and maybe we could base it around nothing but folklore. Would you be game for that?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be great. A lot of fun.
Yes.
Yay, yes. That makes me so happy.
All right. Well, as we're about to go in and close out, I just want to say I hope everyone enjoyed the show. And with the recent events of chaos that's been going on in our world, everyone, please try your hardest to be good to one another, treat your neighbor exactly how you would like to be treated, and
yes,
put forward that extra effort just to make someone's life better. And with that said,
little
I hope everyone
count.
Has a great night. Yes.
Yes, happy reading. Be good.
Happy
Thanks.
Readings.